Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick. What is on our mind this morning? Well, let's see. We've got FedEx going one way after earnings. We have AMD going the other way just for no particular reason, or apparently that was off the Google news from yesterday. We're going to talk about Google as well, being fined again by the European Union. It is a Fed day. Keep that in mind as well. Our guest today is Trip Miller. He would join us at 8:35. He is the founder and managing partner at Goulian Capital, and we'd be remiss not to at least eulogize a little bit SIBO, Bitcoin, futures, so you know we'll do that as well. Joel, what's the word here in the overnight session?
Textbook technical today in the S&P 500 index futures basis, the June pre-market low comes a buck under the low from yesterday, 29.28. Big level on the downside, potential double bottom. On the upside, can't clear the daily pivot or got above it. 42.50 is our pre-market high, big target on the upside, and just dancing above and below the close. Looking at the crude, trying to break into the $60 handle, turned around, turned away in the upper 59 handle 2 days in a row. Now trading down 54 cents here at 58.75. Gold in the red here by $1.30 at 1305.10. Big level of gold on the upside, folks. Keep an eye on 1311. That's a triple top when the Fed comes out with their decision. And you have silver in the red by 3 cents at 1534, kind of a silver market. And as you alluded to, the SIBO, I believe, Dennis, this was a day or two ago, delisting their futures, letting the Junes expire. And Bitcoin is basically flat here today on the session.
How much I care about that, Joel, is I actually heard this. This didn't come out yesterday. It was actually the night before. So we could have talked about this on yesterday's show. I didn't even write it on my sheet to talk about. So, and I have like 20 different ideas on my sheet. And the Bitcoin futures for the CBOE did not even make the cut of the top 20 things to talk about on the day. So it's not only the institutional traders that don't care about Bitcoin. It is me as well.
Yeah, and we'll see. We'll see. The Merck contract is fully margined, and they do a little bit more volume. But wow, what an ending! I don't know. I guess.
Well, it's still going to be on the CME. So yep. You're not getting rid of them altogether. We're still going to have the CME trading. I don't know if they're going to follow suit though. But they are going to just not list anymore. So the ones that are open are still going to be traded, obviously, until they expire, I believe, in June. So as of June, they just aren't going to list any more Bitcoin futures.
Okay. All right. And before we get in and talk to markets, I just want to give you an update from the kids event yesterday.
Yeah, how'd that go?
Oh, we had a fantastic turnout, man. I love kids. Maybe I should be like what do they call them? Big brother or something like that. We had a bunch of kids participating from 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. We did poll questions when we were asking about, we were actually talking about a company raising money, and Jeremy had this nice poll to go up, and they almost all of them got 100% on figuring out the math questions. And then at the end, we opened up the floor to questions, and one 9-year-old asked us what candlesticks are. And
nine-year-old knows about candlesticks.
Yep. And then another
one.
Tell
them that's what lights up your house back in the 1800s.
We talked about the Japanese wheat traders is what we talked about. And then another youngster asked us about the 9:30 trading setup.
What's the 9:30 trading setup? I don't know about this. I thought we were the 9:30 trading setup. I thought it was pre-market prep was the 9:30 trading setup. That's what we try to do. Didn't that respond? What's a 9:30 trading setup?
It's a simple moving average strategy.
Oh. Yeah. Anyways, I could learn some stuff from this. I'm going to have to tune in next time. But and you have this tonight again as well.
Yeah, tonight we're going to be
episode two.
Yeah, episode two. But we got it all taped, and we're going to get it together. We'll get it up here on Benzinga, nice. And then we'll get it up so you can see it. But I just want to go over a few things from yesterday and the trading action in Disney here, Dennis. Pretty fast and furious on
your sell bounce at the close.
Really?
Yeah, okay. And somebody else on my Twitter, everybody wanted to know about Disney because it got crushed there yesterday. I mean, we got the merger obviously going to close here soon with Fox and Fox A. I believe they're still trading Fox and Fox A this morning, but it is going to close here soon. Anyways, for whatever reason, there was just a huge, and I mean huge, seller at the close. So maybe I missed something. Maybe there was something happening there. But if you just go and look at Disney in the last hour, it's straight down. And so the market was rolling over, but nothing was rolling over more than Disney. And I saw it was actually indicated like go down to like 108. But then, you know, liquidity providers like myself come in and it doesn't go down as low. I did buy the closing print at 110. You know, me, scalper blood, I flipped it out as soon as it started getting above 110 after hours. So, but yeah, it was a trader head NYC wanted to know about the Disney price action there too. So it was this huge selling bounce, really knocking it down. And a lot of times you do see those things bounce back when you get those huge sellers right at the close like that. So I would not be surprised if you see a little bit of strength there today. But definitely 110 is a big number for it. So that's what you want to see it hold, especially yesterday's low, which is 109.80.
Do you look at the charts when you go something with that, or you just throw some low ball orders in? Because I'm looking at the dailies, and I don't see a lot at 110. I know it stopped at 109.80. I think if I was trying to scoop that up, I probably wouldn't have gotten done. I would have been a little bit lower. Were you just thinking it's come a long way, it's a whole number, and you stick with the whole number theory on
that
one?
Yeah, well, and when things are trending with the imbalance, usually those moves are faded. And I think there still was something, and like I said, I didn't follow the story close enough. You're doing so many things. I believe there was something with the Fox deal, like the numbers of shares coming out and figuring out exactly what that distribution was going to be. Like Trader Ahead NYC says here too. So that's, you know, what the catalyst was to drive it down there yesterday. But like I said, a lot of times these things do come back up when they're just down on huge selling bounces.
And do you think anybody maybe had the ARB on wrong, you know, between
it's kind of winding it too. They may not necessarily have it on wrong, but when these things start to close or get close and then the ratios start to come out and you start to figure things out, there's some adjustments there too. So it could be a lot. It could be all risk ARBs, you know, a big bulk of that selling. There could be a number of reasons. So, you know, if I was diving in and I was trading that risk ARB, which I haven't been, I'd probably know more details of it. I do risk ARB. I just haven't been trading the Disney Fox one. So there, and you know, maybe I should have been, but you know, you can't trade them. Well, you can trade them all, I guess, but I should know that, but I don't.
And let's just stick along these lines because I like to do the questions in the chat as much as possible. BZZT is asking if we can go over the DuPont. Who was that? DuPont. I can't remember who it is. Who did DuPont do the deal with?
Dow.
Midland Dow. It says it will give you one share for every three shares, and then it gives the record date March 21st. So his question is, so on March 22nd, do you get the spinoff and the shares will readjust? I hope I didn't butcher that question too bad.
You butchered it up pretty good because you got me lost on it. But I'm not sure which day. Do you know the day when we're going to be doing this, when the spinoff actually happens,
Spencer? Record date is the 21st. Record date is the 21st.
Okay, the record date is the 21st. It's when they obviously jot down who's got it. But so do we know the first trade date of the spinoff?
It would be, isn't it usually 1 to 2 days after the record date?
So the win issue is coming up the 20th. I just looked it up. Win issue is on the 20th. So that's when you'll see today's the 20th, isn't it?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah. So DOW.WI should come out today. I can see it's already there. It hasn't traded yet. So that's going to be the spinoff. So yes, the record date will be tomorrow. And then the distribution date for new Dow shares that the Dow DuPont shareholders get it is going to be April the 1st. So it's going to be on April the 1st. But it will trade right now. And the regular trading is expected to start on April the 2nd. And that will be under the symbol Dow. So on April, so today you're already going to see DOW.WI trading. And on April 2nd, it'll lose the .WI. So that means when issued. So they trade these things ahead of time, which is amazing, you know, that they can do that. and they trade it with a .WI, and on April 2nd, they'll lose a .WI, and it'll just be normal trading.
Okay, I hope that answers.
Why do they spin it off? That's my question, because you had, just looking at it here, and I'm trying to trade and do things. It's always fun when you're trying to do a segment, you're trying to trade stocks as well, it's completely different stocks. And I'm not the best multitask master. Why did they do that? Because obviously they merged, and now they're spinning Dow back off. Did they say why they're doing that?
The whole thing is because they merged like 3 years ago, right? It was like really.
They didn't like the merger, so they decided to spin it back off?
Relatively recent, I think. I don't really know why.
I used to always love trading Dow and DuPont. It was DOW and DD. I traded those two.
Yep.
And often together, a nice pair. And then they merged them up, and I couldn't do it anymore. So I guess I'm going to get to do it again. So I guess I should be happy as a trader to have more things to trade.
Okay. All right. Let's go to earnings after the close.
Steve says there's more spinoffs, too. I didn't know. Is there more spinoffs than just the Dow?
I'll admit I have not followed the Dow story.
Forget the chat questions.
I have not followed the Dow DuPont story closely.
You're burying us, chat. Give us an easy question. Yeah. Give us like, how'd you like the FedEx earnings? Oh, I didn't like them. It's down $11 and I own the stock.
I can't answer this one. They were bad. I did it. Q3 adjusted EPS, $3.03. Versus a $3.17 estimate, sales $17 billion versus $17.69 billion. So a slight sales miss, larger EPS miss for the Q3. The guidance they gave was mostly light. The estimate was at the high end. Actually, it was light. The estimate was above the high end of the range they gave, and that was for the fiscal year EPS. So they essentially missed on their EPS for the Q3. They missed on their EPS for the fiscal year guidance. And that's your story this morning.
And not happy in Denny's portfolio. I do have FedEx. It was the one that I bought the day. There was one that I actually bought basically at the low because I bought it on the 26th. So I should have bought a lot more stocks that day. In hindsight, it's 2020, but I didn't. And obviously FedEx is one that has come back a long ways from those lows. I think I got in at 156. So I'm still up in it, but giving back a bulk of the gains here today. I'm sticking with it. I bought it for a long-term hold. The thing's still making $15, $16. I don't think FedEx is going away, so I'm sticking with it long-term. Short-term trend will break on this. Question is, do the body of the dippers come in? They've come in on a lot of stuff. I don't know if they're coming in this one or not. They haven't been coming in the after-hour session, I'll tell you that, because it continues to leak. But give me your thoughts, Mr. Alkanen.
Do you think the all-time high is in this one? Do you think it will ever?
I don't know if I'd say the all-time high, but that high is safe for a long time.
Yeah, 274.
Like 274, so it's 100 points higher. Yeah. It'll take a long time to get back there, the people who are buying it up at 274.
I mean,
the reason I got back in was I bought the stock back at like $90 way back in the day. And I sold it up around the 165 area. And I always regretted that sale because obviously I watched it go to 270. So I feel like the whole, sell-off of November, December gave me the chance to get my shares back. And I'm back in now. So really, when I look at this, I feel like my cost basis is way down. Not only at 91, which was my original purchase, because I would actually scalp 10 points, it'd be like $81 now. So I feel like I'm going to stick with this one probably for a long, long time.
All right. It's
not like my Tesla holding, which is I'm nervous as hell with all the time, even though it's a half size holding. I just, I am. FedEx, I'm comfortable holding it.
We got a dip and we just made a low on the session at 168.25. That stands at your pre-market low. That's pretty close to a low I'll be keeping an eye on, and that comes in at 167.61. So there's your first potential area of support if, in fact, you get through the pre-market low. Taking out a lot of gains from yesterday. Just be aware, man, going into the last report, this thing got crushed after its report, and it took another 2 or 3 days for it to settle, and make its low for the move. Of course, you had market dynamics working that time as well. So they're 167.61. I'll give that as a support level.
UPS also getting hit on this. It's down $2.35. Stock that I've always wanted in my MS portfolio, but I've never put it in there. I'm not putting it in here today, though. I think you could eventually test that 105. I mean, this FedEx is ugly. Sympathy hasn't worked that well, though. We've been talking about that for the last year. Your typical sympathy moves, unless they're obviously risk arbitrage completely related. It's just that sympathy, the purest plays, have sometimes been shrugged off. So UPS is down here, not that bad. But just caution those who are saying, oh, it's going to come way down a lot further because FedEx is down. Because the sympathy plays have not been working like they have in the past. At least not lately.
Okay. All right. Well,
I expect a sympathy move, but I don't expect you to see the thing get slaughtered because FedEx is slaughtered.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, for me, I just think, you know, we've had the talk of Amazon coming in before and delivering their own packages. I believe they're experimenting with drones and stuff. So that's the only reason I thought that if Amazon did make a major push into this, and I think that's what hit the stock originally. Yeah. So there's a lot of different.
There's definitely some wild cards out there. And if Amazon's going to get their own drones and they're going to start delivering, I mean, that's going to be a problem maybe for FedEx and UPS going forward. And then maybe some, you know, reevaluation. FedEx CEO on the call last night, or I don't know if it's COO, said he's not worried about Amazon. I don't know if that's the best thing to say because I'm kind of worried about Amazon. It's the only reason that I'm somewhat skeptical in my FedEx position, but I'm still comfortable holding it because they're just a cash cow money-making machine.
Speaking of Amazon,
what a breakout for that. A breakout for it. We did call this on the show. It was $16.95, and I was like, this looks rare and a go. I wish I would have bought it. I did not. Stock's up 80 points from that when I said that 5 days or 4 days ago. Amazon also catching an upgrade, I believe it was yesterday. They're also getting initiated with an overweight at Evercore here this morning. Price target was in the upper 1900s. I can't remember what it was. I don't know if you have it in front of you, Spencer, but I saw like 1950 or something. Anyways, up another 10 bucks. Thanks to Evercore.
Actually, it was your call and your call only on that. Who gave it the upgrade? I don't know what day it was. It was a few days ago.
And I shouldn't say 1694. It was 1704. It was just breaking. It was because it was bumping its head up against that resistance. And I'm like, this is the upgrade. And you made the call, too. Actually said, is this another Apple? The Apple, the old gap and go after a big upgrade. And it was. I mean, we're up 70 points from that level here now. So I think we can safely say this does appear to be another Apple. And Apple finally has a down day yesterday. So, but it went up for 5 or 6 straight days, basically, after it got upgraded. And Amazon has been up for a couple days since the upgrade. It looks like it's going to be up here again today with the Evercore love. These things, you know, when they get the analyst love, sometimes I can kickstart them, and that's what's happened with Amazon.
KeyBank is the one.
KeyBank. Okay. Do you have the Evercore note there, Freddie Spencer, by any chance?
Don't have it, sorry.
All right.
I'm not going to give any numbers on Amazon because I don't know if I ever do give any really good ones with those $1,700, $1,800 stocks. But I will alert all of our Apple traders, investors, that you did have a weekday yesterday, but you have a level to lean on. You have a pair of lows, 185.79, 185.92. Boom. Double bottom after the big move up. Trading, you know, nicely above that area right now. But keep an eye on that if you're trying to lock in. So long-term profits in Apple.
Price target on Amazon is $19.65 from Evercore today.
All right.
I think it's a good price target. I think eventually it's going to be $2,000 stock again. So I'm an Amazon bull hat on.
All right. Let's cover another after our intraday mover. And if there's one stock that you trade and you keep on your list, like I do with AMD, you just got to be in it to win it because that someone might have had the news off the open. That thing was straight up off the open.
Yeah.
And then the Google news came out. Yeah. Go ahead. Why don't Spencer give us that Google news?
Yeah, well, we said yesterday that they were going to announce some sort of gaming service. They did announce that. And as part of that announcement, they said they're going to use AMD chips for their service. There we go.
Just huge, huge news for AMD. Getting the follow through here today. Buddy Jamie at Bright, great call by him. He's like, is this set up well for the 2 day move? And I said, yes, it does. I was just concerned because the market had closed fairly weak. And I was like, if we get, you know, some follow through selling in the market, which has now been bought the dip on that too, as a side note, because it's all the way S&P's just went positive. then, you know, I thought that might weigh on it. So I did not buy it. I wish I would have, Jamie. I hope you did, because, wow, AMD trading up another 50 cents here. It was set up for the two-day move. Great call by you. Absolutely moving higher here and getting a lot of love. Huge breakout for that. Anybody short this thing is now in a world of pain.
Yeah, I'll just give you the pre-market high on this one. Pre-market high comes in at 26.78, and the only thing that I can give you on the dailies, if you're looking for a little bit more of a rally, you could go to your 27.10 high on October 19th. So that's a good 60 cents away from here. Huge run. Where to buy this thing on a pullback? I really don't know. Maybe the close at 26.03. But, yeah, you talk about a two-day run. It closed at 4.01 at 4 o'clock, and then it was like 26.05, 26.10, 26.15. So I don't know if you had some major shortcoming or whatever, but a real nice move there in AMD, and totally messed up. I wanted to buy this thing when it took out the weekly high at like 24.20. And I blinked, and it was 24.60. I guess sometimes having buy stops or, you know, better alerts set on your systems can get you into things. But it's gone. She gone.
It's gone, and there's going to be people scrambling on pullbacks here too. So the chips are all back. I mean, AMD's come a long ways back. NVIDIA's hot as hell. So, and I had a nice day yesterday. I do own NVIDIA in the long-term portfolio. You look at like Applied Materials back up over 40, that looks rearing to go kind of too. Western Digital is just meandering here, but if I had to make a bet, and I am, I guess, because I have it in my long-term portfolio, I still say higher. The chips have come back a long ways. The question just on the overall market, though, is we did have a down day yesterday, and let's just take it to the overall market just for a couple minutes.
Sure.
We were up strong. We did have a little pullback, a little reversal off the highs. Fairly significant. I mean, you're talking about 25 handles fall off the highs. Overnight, we get down again. We actually go try to test those lows, but we've bounced. Now we're flat here. Was that the pullback? Is that the kind of pullback to get us 20 points in the S&Ps, the pullback to buy now? Or do you think we get some follow through here today?
I think that you'll
What's
see
the technicals tell us?
The technicals tell us that we are still in a major bull trend. And yeah. I didn't see any particular headlines yesterday for that midday.
Maybe they were worried that there wasn't going to be a trade deal. Maybe they were worried all of a sudden going into the Fed meeting today, which we'll follow up with this discussion.
There you go. That is exactly what I was going to say.
Because the banks really rolled over yesterday. The banks were so strong off the hop. And Bank of America did take out the $30, did open at 30, did take it out. But then they all just started, late morning, started reversing. And most of the banks closed significantly in the red. It can look like JP Morgan is very strong, 108.5, went down to 106.80, closed at 106.80. And then you look, Goldman Sachs, same thing, was very strong, lost 5 points off the highs. Morgan Stanley was strong, it lost almost a buck off the highs. Citigroup sold off significantly off the highs, over $1.50 off the highs. So, I mean, the banks, some profit taking maybe ensued here, maybe a little bit of nervousness that, hey, they may not get hawkish here. Maybe they still remain dovish. I don't know. The Fed's going to be a wild card here today.
That's exactly right. So we had a 30-point break. So halfway on that takes you out right to the area you're at, 28.42.50. The high close of the move has been 28.40.50. A lot of synergy there at 28.40. You know you're going to have a lot of volatility after the announcement. I'd just like to see us pose another closing high for the move and then boom to me. If not, then maybe we have a little bit of a soft. Remember, we're still coming off a triple or a quad witch, turning points in the market, resumption of the trend or a reverse. I've been thinking a lot about our June all-time high bet, Dennis.
Yeah.
And I know
well, we didn't make the bet.
We never made the bet.
You want to make that bet?
Well, I was saying, I thought we made the bet, and I was going to upgrade it from a lunch to a steak dinner.
Oh, I don't think we actually pulled the trigger on the bet. We talked about it. But I was saying, my call was that we make new all-time highs, meaning we're going to be up 100 S&P handles here by that's a tough, because I'm giving you such an edge here. Because not only do I have to pick the direction correctly, it's got to go 100 points my way. So that's why I'm definitely not going a steak dinner on it, because really when we make these bets, we say, are we going to be higher or lower in June? That's the fair point. So this is really like a slam dunk bet for you, because you have the edge here. You have everything on this. I'm just convicted in the call that I think we're going back to all-time highs.
Okay, the bet was made, according to PFD, according to
Randy. We made the bet. Joel, I don't get it. 293.95 on the SPY, because I follow the SPY, because I don't like to pay for S&P futures quotes. 293.95 on the SPY at any time before June, I win.
Joel, you said you were writing it down in the moment.
Did you not write it down?
Joel are old and we forget things. And I forget what I ate yesterday. I forget what I did yesterday half the time. I can't even remember what stocks I have in here. I struggle sometimes when I look at my, I bring up my CNBC app like 5 in the morning. I see the S&P is down 20 or something. And I struggle. It's like, first of all, am I net long or short? Secondly, what stocks do I have? And then I see, the upgrades, downgrades. I'm like, do I have that stock? I think I do, but I don't know if I'm long or short.
What do you do? Do you just like, press, oh, well, there, this is what I have. I'm long. Well, I better hedge this.
I log in. I was like, oh, I guess I was short that. That's not good news.
I just want to, William Lay here, he wants to, it was Friday that we made the call on Amazon. He sold yesterday. Huge winner.
Made some money off of us. Nice.
Yeah, that's what we like to see.
Congratulations. That's what we make this show for, so some people can make some money. I'm not smart enough to actually trade my own calls most of the time. But, sometimes it's selective perception, right? I get some wrong, too. I mean, I usually trade the ones that I'm going to be wrong on, like Tesla. I should trade them all because I'm hedging myself, because it seems like I naturally pick the ones I'm going to be wrong on. But regardless... Let's move on here. We got one more earnings report before 8:30 imbalances come out, and that is General Mills. And I got lucky on this one because this was trading up a buck last night, and I was like, I feel like shorting this. I threw it out a little bit higher, but I did not get done. So basically just shorting it just because they were giving me an edge. And it's up over $2 here this morning, so it would have been a loser. Give me the numbers, Spencer. GIS must have did something right.
Well, yeah, it was a good report. Their Q3 adjusted EPS, 83 cents versus a 69 cent estimate. Nice beat. Sales 4.2 versus $4.19 billion. So a beat on the top and the bottom line. In the Q3 for General Mills, their adjusted EPS guidance, flat to up 1% on a year-over-year basis is what they guided for their upcoming quarterly EPS. But a good report.
There's a lot of size in the book here. So I'm looking at this. It's traded a lot of stock, 90,000 shares, but it makes me somewhat nervous here to be buying up here because I'm looking in the New York book, and I see at 47.98 and 48, 25,000, 20,000. There's 50,000 shares there. That's a 48. And this liquidity becomes active at 9:30. 48.5 has 60,000. So now we're over 100. 49, another 13,000. 49, 39, another 40,000. So I got 150. And we keep going up all the way to $50 and you're 34,000. You probably got a good 200,000 shares worth to chew through to get up to where it's trading right now. It's traded 90. That helps. But unless this trades more actively, this could actually shockingly not open this high.
Did everyone get the math on that? I just want to make sure because we have some new listeners and people that come into the show.
Yeah, let me explain it. So I'm looking at the New York book, and this New York orders are active for the New York open. So these are orders. New York Stock Exchange does not trade pre-market. ARCA trades pre-market, but the NYSE Legacy Exchange does not. These orders are sitting on the Legacy Exchange, the NYSE Exchange, and that liquidity will become active. When you see all this size, and if it's real, which it probably is because it hasn't been up there for a while, it's going to try to hold down the opening prints. So there's an edge in there that I often trade saying, if this thing trades over 200,000 shares by the open, probably all bets are off it can open above that. But if it trades under 200,000, it's going to struggle to open over, I would say open over 49. So I think it's going to open higher. I think it can open over 48. I wouldn't be surprised that 48.5 at 65,000 shares holds it down though too. So just saying caution to the person who just randomly coming here and buying it here because I think the open could be a little bit lower. It's the same reason I was shorting Bank America the other day. When you see so much a buck and you see where the Bank America opened, 30 on the kisser. That size holds down the opening print sometimes. These are edges that you get when you subscribe to the open book. And it's $60 a month. I subscribe to it. I can see all this stuff in there. And sometimes that will hold it down. Now, it has traded some volume. It's not like it's only traded 9,000 shares. I'd probably be selling short right now. But because it's trading 90, jury's still out. Maybe it can trade enough stock to chew through it. But it's going to be has some work to do in order to open as high as it's trading right now.
And, of course, those orders can cancel, but really a lot of those orders are GTC orders.
They're sitting out there for a long time.
Long time. Yep.
Like especially it hasn't been up there. So that's why, you know, a lot of times, and I don't hope that people are listening to me and they're going to knock it down right now. Anyways, it's getting hit here right now. Probably because actually not because of me, probably because the imbalance just came out and it's small. And the reason it's small is there's a lot of stuff in the book. So anyways, 49.40, I'm going to start talking about that. I probably should just start actually shorting it, but.
You know, someone got super excited, Dennis. 50.50 was your pre-market high.
Yeah, it's not good. I don't think there's any chance. I would be shocked if GIS, I don't think it's going to open over 49, in my opinion. But it might. It's got to trade a lot more stock. 49.39, 40,000 shares. I think that's going to be as high as it's going to trade, is 49.39. But I think it's going to open 48.5. I'm calling the open just by looking at book pressure and looking at that. Nobody does that. Who calls the open? I'm trying to call the price. I called yesterday in Bank of America. I'm saying GIS, if it stays here, opens at 48.5 or less. Okay. I think it could. But we'll see. If it starts trading, it's just trade 10,000 shares. If it starts trading like crazy, then that changes. But right now, it's already kind of leaking down here a little bit too. So 49.40 when we were telling you about this. This is the edges we try to give you in the morning.
I just want to tell you, you helped me with the Bank of America yesterday because I did buy it on that breakout over 29.75. And I was really hoping to see the pre-market high. But it wouldn't go. I mean, it opened at 30.
It was just too big. There was over 1 million shares to sell at 30. That was going to hold down the opening print. It was just not enough volume. When you're looking at pre-market volume of 500,000 or 600,000 shares and you see 1 million to go at 30, the volume isn't there to take it out. It hasn't traded enough. There's not enough people who have bought it up there or sold it short up there to take out the 30. Because what's happening is, and why the dynamics to this works, is you've got other people looking at the buck. And they're saying, okay, well, I see the million at 30. It's not just me looking at the buck. It's public information. I see this million at 30, so I'm comfortable to short it at 30.10, 30.15, 30.20. If over 1 million people do that, then all those people who are doing that strategy, they're going to be potential people who are buying at the open. So that's why if you get over 1 million, people who have all shorted it are going to be covering. There's enough to take that initial size out. So in this case, the GIS is going to take some big institutional action to take it out, or it's going to take, you know, it needs to trade another 100,000 shares here in the pre-market to take out that size of 49.39. So I'm just looking, I'm giving you a whole bunch of different levels because of size all over the place. I would say 48.50, if it trades over 100, and let me add up, 10, 35, 75, probably about 150. It needs to trade over 150 to trade over 48.5. And then you probably need another 30 to trade over 49, but then you need another 40 to trade over 49.39. I think 49.39 puts a lid on it.
Okay. All right. We'll keep an eye on it. Yeah. Great analysis, kind of looking into the future by looking into the past in the book. 834. Yeah. 834. All these stocks that are coming up here in the Google YouTube chat, we will cover. We will do that after our guest, Spencer. What do we got on the docket?
Yep. Trip Miller, who has actually not been on our show since December of 2016. I don't know what took us so long to get him back, but we'll be right back in a moment here with Trip Miller. He is the founder and managing partner at Goulain Capital. We'll be right back. All right, and as promised, we are live with Trip Miller, founder and managing partner at Goulain Capital. Trip, how's it going today?
It's going great. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, Trip. It's great to get you back on again. I know it's been quite some time. Tell us a little bit about your firm and your investment philosophy.
Sure. At the core, we're value investors, kind of model our long approach after Warren Buffett's. So we're looking for great businesses run by honorable, capable people, trading at a big discount to our conservative appraisal. And a little bit different, we do some shorting as well. It's a meaningful piece of what we do. And so we look for just the opposite on the short side.
Do you try and keep an open, you know, a balanced book? Or, I mean, or it just depends on the market conditions.
Yeah, you know, we feel like that, you know, we get all the diversification we need out of running anywhere between a dozen and 25 positions at any given time. So we're big believers in concentration. And, you know, for us, we'd love to have those positions be in different sectors. We don't want to over concentrate in any one, but we tend to just go to where the opportunity is in the market. And if we're not finding anything, we're willing to be patient, wait, and own cash until something comes our way that we feel compelled to deploy capital in.
Okay, before we break down some individual issues here, let's just get a general market thought from you. The old V bottom in December, straight back up, strong market after expiration. I guess the China, the tariff thing is not resolved, nor will it know if it ever be resolved. Different factors in the market, the Fed here. What's your overall outlook after the big decline in December and the wicked rally back?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think the market overreacted in December threw us a lot of fat pitches where we were able to deploy a lot of our capital into some great businesses we owned at lower prices and businesses we'd always wanted to own. When you look at this market and where it is now, I think, from us, we're bottom-up investors. And what I would just say is we are finding more opportunity overseas right now to research and potentially deploy capital to than we are domestically. But as we all know, that could change in a New York minute. This market could pull back and us as value investors could be finding a lot to do domestically. But in general, that's what we're seeing. The markets, I think, it's kind of the three bears analogy with the porridge, too hot, too cold, just right. It's probably about fairly valued. So it's an interesting, challenging environment to find places to deploy capital domestically.
And I assume your trades are long in duration. Do you set definitive price targets and stops and whatnot? Or how do you gauge your exits and entries?
Sure. So for us, in general, on our entry point, we're looking for on the long side at least a 40% discount to our appraisal for us to deploy capital. And obviously, we hope we're buying great businesses that are growing. So certainly that appraisal hopefully grows as we go along. So that's an important thing for us to know what a business is worth before we enter, which helps us on the exit side. If a business is approaching, it gets within 10% of our appraisal, we'll start scaling out of it. And by the time it hits our appraisal, we're completely gone. We will use some options. We'll sell covered calls as we're getting closer to business hitting our full appraisal. We tend to obviously use shorts as a hedge in general to try to moot some market volatility and be opportunistic there. But that's kind of our buy-sell approach. It's really targeted and based off of appraisal of these businesses we own.
All right. We couldn't pick a better day to have you on and talk about one of your holdings. And they had earnings today. FedEx, you're a long-term shareholder. So I'm sure that this, if you've been in it a long time, you've seen a lot of up and down price action. Tell us about the report and if it changes your model at all.
Yeah, FedEx obviously had what Wall Street in the short term would define as a disappointing report last night. They missed on top line revenue. They missed on earnings. They lowered their guidance for the second quarter in a row. We have been long-term shareholders in FedEx, both personally and as a fund for many decades, actually. And we've increased and decreased our position based on its relation to our appraisal. What we're seeing in FedEx, which is a wonderful bellwether of the global economy, is slowdown in Europe, slowdown in Asia. They're very vocal, that the trade war certainly has slowed down a lot of their China business. And so they've got a lot of insight into what's really going on there that obviously with the government being shut down earlier in the year, I think some of this data is lagging. So they continue to see weakness in those two spots, although they did talk a little bit about green sprouts popping up there. What's important to us is that they are aggressively at these lows buying back their stock. So we think that they're deploying their capital very intelligently. They are not cutting back on their CapEx as far as new systems, new sorting hubs in Indianapolis and upgrades in Memphis, and upgrades in Indianapolis and Memphis, and new aircraft. So we see a lot of long-term opportunity here. It's a business that adjusted is going to make over $15 a share this year. So we see it as a value play, although they may have another few quarters or a year in front of them that is difficult, especially as they integrate their TNT acquisition in Europe, which I think will pay off handsomely for them over the long term. But again, for the next 3 to 12 months, I think they've got a lot of uphill climbing to do here versus some of these economic factors that are working against them.
Trip, I want to interrupt there. We actually had a discussion yesterday just about buybacks in general. You said you like the buyback. Would you rather them use that capital in other ways, or for example, a dividend hike or a other reinvestment, or are you very content with their buyback strategy?
Yeah, a couple of points. Since 2014, the company's returned about $14 billion to shareholders via dividends and buybacks. So we feel like they're deploying capital very intelligently. On top of that, when you look at a year like this year, they're going to spend $5.6 billion on CapEx. So they're certainly not under-investing in the business. We feel like they're taking a very intelligent, thoughtful, diversified approach to how they deploy capital within the business and return capital to shareholders. So in a case like this, where we've got a stock that's trading near its 52-week low, 30%+ off its 52-week high. You know, we like the fact that they're going in there and sending the signal to shareholders, we get it, the stock's cheap, we're going to go and deploy capital here and buy back a lot of stock, which we think right now is one of the highest return opportunities they can do, along with updating their modernizing their transportation fleet for their express business, which they're doing, you know, over several years here with new aircraft. So we think they're taking the right approach, and it's kind of like levers. You know, for us, one minute we may say the most intelligent thing is to reinvest in a business, and the next we may say, hey, it's to buy back the stock. So we like the flexibility they've shown and the consistency they've shown over the years and having a real focus to do what's best for shareholders.
Fair enough.
And what about the looming Amazon threat?
You know, it's interesting. You know, Amazon is approximately, they said last night, about 1.3% of their revenue. So Ooh. It's a very small piece, which is a bit misunderstood versus, I think, roughly it's about 13% of UPS's revenue. So they have not over bet and overcommitted to Amazon, which gives them pricing power. They would tell you that their Amazon business is still relatively low margin. And we own Amazon as well. And what I would tell you is nobody has benefited more from the networks that have been built out globally by UPS, FedEx, U.S. Postal Service domestically than Amazon. You not to say you wouldn't have Amazon without them, but Amazon wouldn't be what they are without those networks. And so we think FedEx is in a very unique position, unlike UPS, to not be over-dependent on Amazon, but they benefit from the growth in e-commerce, you know, which we believe has still got a lot of upside potential ahead of it.
Okay, let's move on to another one of your holdings, Wynn Resorts. The Stephen Wynn thing that really put the top end of the stock around $200, I believe that was around a year ago. Talk about the fundamentals, your fair value analysis here for Wynn Resorts.
Sure. Obviously, you know, a lot of news last year with the change with iconic leader Steve Wynn and some of his transgressions. What we're most excited about is we've got a very strong CEO there in Matt Maddox, who had been CFO. We've got a revamped board of directors led by Phil Sadra. So I think the corporate governance question has been answered and answered very well, but not only with their leadership in the business, but at the board level, they've added a very talented group of ladies to the board. So they've got a very strong board of directors here looking out for shareholders. And I think it's certainly answered the question already in Nevada on the corporate governance side, where they've paid a fine and moved on, and we're waiting to see what that fine is going to be in Massachusetts. That leads into the catalyst for Wynn. You know, the stock's been beaten down, but we see a lot of free cash flow kicking in over the next 6 to 18 months as they bring their casino Encore online, supposedly June 23rd, unless there's a further delay in Massachusetts. They've got a huge advantage up there as being the only casino in the Boston metropolitan area. So that will be huge for them as they come online. And we think that their numbers will be far in excess of what the street expects from an EBITDA level there. Two, they've got one of six gaming concessions in Macau, which literally for those six gaming concessionaires is a license to print money. The market's been a little bit soft based on how China has ebbed and flowed, but they're still making, you know, over 2/3 of their EBITDA from China. And additionally, they've got optionality where they're developing part of their golf course property right now into additional convention space in Las Vegas. That'll come online in January. So a lot of catalysts, and CFO Matt Maddox is very focused on free cash flow generation. So we see a business that should be throwing off anywhere between $10 and $12 in free cash flow in 2020. And you know, the stock's just under $120 a share. So, you know, simple math, that to us is a very high free cash flow coupon. So we're excited about it, in multiple facets.
And, what about, when sports gaming goes fully into effect here? Do you see that as a boost to the revenues for Wynn Resorts?
Well, for them right now, when you look at the sports betting side, you know, domestically, we expect that a bill to be passed in Boston and allow sports gambling in Massachusetts at some point over the next 24 months. They've obviously already got it in Nevada. I think sports gambling is more an additional amenity for all the different gaming companies that are getting to take bets in multiple states now instead of just Nevada. So, you know, much like a high-end restaurant or a nightclub, you know, it's an additional draw that keeps people in the casinos longer, which leads to them playing more. The math works. They know how to keep you there longer and get you to play more. And so that's what we've seen data from other operators in Mississippi and New Jersey is people are coming that didn't come before. And once they're there, they're staying longer and they're spending more money in other facets of the casino. So we continue to see growth in that, but ultimately it's not a huge high margin business for any of these operators. It's more of an amenity that brings in a different clientele and keeps them there longer. So we like it. We think it's a catalyst, but we don't think it's a huge catalyst for any of these operators.
And the last stock that you wanted to talk about, Dollar General. Boy, you talk about buying the dip in this one. All-time highs, gets hit on the report, and boom. Rallies right back up. Talk about DG.
Yeah, Dollar General is a business that we've owned in the past, and it's a bit unique. It's got some characteristics we really love. I mean, it's basically, you know, an oligopoly, if not a duopoly, with Family Dollar. And we really like their competitive advantage in the space. They've got an advantage versus convenience stores, groceries, in that they're really a value play. They bring a lot of value to their customer. They focus on a tighter radius than some of the other larger operators as far as servicing that customer that they know well, and they can go into very small, you know, rural markets where they have a lot of strength and a lot of advantages over other operators that just can't make the math work to get in there. And also, too, it's a barrier to entry against one of our favorite businesses, Amazon, in that, you know, it's just very difficult for that Amazon network to service some of these smaller rural communities. And two, they're also servicing more of the inner city and major metropolitan areas where you won't see a Walmart go into. So we like that. They buy back stock. They use zero-based budgeting. They throw off a lot of free cash flow. And if you look at their store unit growth, you'd be hard-pressed to find a box retailer in the U.S. that's grown as rapidly as they have. In 17, I think they opened about 1,400 stores, 1,100 organic and 300 via acquisition. Last year, 700-800 stores. We think they'll do somewhere between 600 and 800 this year. So this is a business that's a box retailer that's growing rapidly here domestically in the U.S. And I think, interestingly enough, people talk about the ebbs and flows of the economy. This is a very recession-resistant business. And as you pointed out, the stock dipped on earnings when they missed on their margins. But you know, this is a business that we think you want to own for the long term and buy opportunistically on dips, as was proven over the last week. Our last purchases were down in the 70s, so it's up a good bit since we bought it again. But, you know, if this stock pulls back again significantly, we think it's an interesting buy for long-term investors who are looking for something to hedge their other long exposure if and when the markets pull back.
Tripp, what separates DG from Dollar Tree?
You know, for us, a couple of things. We think Family Dollar, Dollar Tree, obviously same entity, is just, it's an inferior, it's not as well run as Dollar General. They have just proven over time financially not to be able to do the things that Dollar General has done and reward shareholders as well. A lot of debt. Obviously, you know, you've seen different squabbles between activist shareholders being involved there. So we think that all those things are just signals that, you know, make that an inferior business to Dollar General. The Dollar Tree business and Family Dollar were businesses that, you know, we look back a couple of years ago with the acquisitions, Dollar General was very interested in. So we think that kind of like Coke and Pepsi, they play well together. There's not a price war going on. But I would point out, too, that they do service a little bit different customers when you focus just in on Dollar Tree. The product mix there is a little bit different than, you know, some of the consistent products that you need at Dollar General that are more of a diversified pool of products. I think of a Dollar Tree more as where I go with my children and we're going to spend $5 and go pick up a few things that may be more trivial. I go to Dollar General when I need to pick up milk and bread and some basics.
Okay. Just one other question for you. You had talked about targets and long-term holdings, and we were talking about a stock and orders in the book here. Like your positions, I mean, you're just not moving in and out of them in a day, right? Or 2 days or 3 days. It must, with the size of your positions, do you guys like to lay out GTC orders at certain prices, or do you reevaluate the market according to your model every day?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think one of our, advantages is that, though we're a very concentrated investor, the super majority of our businesses, we're very liquid stocks. I mean, if we needed to sell out of our win position, we certainly could do that in a matter of hours in any given day. So I think, size flexibility is one of our advantages, being a smaller manager. And so we don't really have those worries on most of our longs that maybe some others do, of just being too big of a position and too big of a part of daily volume for that stock.
We've been on the line with someone who has not joined our show in far too long, Trip Miller. He's a founder and managing partner of Goolin Capital. Trip, thanks so much for coming on. We'll have to get you back before another 3 years passes by.
Thank you all very much. Enjoyed it.
All right. Have a good one.
Spoo's just dancing around here unchanged here, 36.50. I think you're going to see this kind of action here ahead of the Fed announcement at 2 o'clock. I know we covered a lot of things here. We were concentrated in a couple things earlier. Spencer, you want to play some catch-up?
With the chat, you mean?
Oh, well, we got a lot of stuff in the chat here.
We didn't talk that NVRO.
Okay,
that's your big mover of the day. If I go to my scanners here and I'm looking, what's your top gainers here this morning? I see a couple $2 stocks, and then at number four, I see a $55 stock, and that is NVRO trading up 24%. We have multiple upgrades. We've got a new CEO. We got some type of deal or something happening here. What's all this news on NVRO?
It's the new CEO and president who they poached from Thoratic. His name is Keith, Dr. Keith Grossman. Apparently, along with that, they settled some board positions, and that includes a settlement with Broadfin, who is an activist investor, I believe. Yeah.
New CEO must be going to change the whole company around. Anyways, up 24%, two upgrades this morning, too. Bank of Montreal, and who's the other one? Wells Fargo?
I just had it up.
I think it's Wells.
Bank of America and BMO.
Oh, Bank of America is the other one. Bank okay. America. Yeah, you know what? I'm reading my writing. It is B of A. And I thought it said WFC.
What?
I can't read my own writing. Anyways, okay. So this stock is hot as hell this morning. It's up 10 points. It's taken out at least the most recent highs of the move. It's come back. What are your thoughts here, Joel? It's a big pop, 10 points for new CEO.
Little excessive in my opinion, but the street has a different opinion. Your pre-market high just made recently at 56.58, so that's an important area to keep an eye on, see if we can get above that. Won't get super excited if it does take that out, because I want to see what happens at 57.26. That was your October high. Where to buy this on a pullback? I have absolutely no idea.
Jump over just in other news here too. What about ratings? Because we talked to NVRO. There wasn't like a ton of like, whoa, check this one out, but there was a lot of ratings. Can you give us a quick rundown here, Spence?
I really didn't see anything super noteworthy this morning. We've already talked about a couple. We talked about Amazon. Let's see here.
I saw one good one.
What'd you see?
Goldman Sachs on Monster Beverage.
Okay, right. Goldman Sachs downgrading MNST this morning to neutral. We have, honestly, that's kind of it. HubSpot assumed at Guggenheim and a buy, but
we had a note from SunTrust on a lot of pharma.
Jefferies did downgrade Sony this morning to hold. I think that's on the heels of the Google news from yesterday.
That's down big.
Yep,
that's a stock we don't talk about a lot. I don't like trading ADRs, we know that, but SNE trading down $1.50 here this morning, $44. This actually on, coming off yesterday's little tough candle there. Now it's going to be a really tough candle here this morning. What are your thoughts on Sony?
Sony, boom, boom. We are, boy, trading under $44 here. I'm keeping an eye on the February low. Well, a couple lows in February that are relevant. 43.67. That was your Feb 8th low, and then you drop another stick to 42.43. But just remember, this is not the primary market, and a lot of it's been pretty tight ranges here after it adjusts to the overnight trading. I see really, really small ranges. Unless you have a range like you did on February 1st where it got hit pretty good. But price action may be already in this one as we take a look at the daily charts.
All right, Joel, well, let's get to some tickers in the chat before we run out of...
Oh, boy, I got a lot of them. Dennis, if you want to, you know, resume...
I'm here for two, three minutes.
Okay. Yeah.
Why not get an imbalance look first? Because I'm going to have to leave in 3 minutes.
Please,
I have to go trade my open.
Please do.
So Walmart, 113,000 to sell. That is significant here. I'm not sure if there's a catalyst there. I didn't see news on Walmart, but maybe I missed it. 113,000 to sell. Stocks trading down 55 cents. That's significant. We do have some of your oil stocks. Weaker oil is down this morning. ExxonMobil, 60,000 to sell. Chevron, 41,000 to sell. You know what? These are actually some significant imbalances here. Procter & Gamble, 40,000 to sell. Coca-Cola, 52,000 to sell. Morgan Stanley, 40,000 to sell. Alibaba, 49,000 to sell. Some of your Chinese stocks are weak as one. Disney has 100,000 to buy. We talked about that already. You know, bouncing off the 110 area, which is doing here this morning. General Electric, 83,000 to sell, which isn't that big for General Electric. FedEx, we know that's going to get bigger. It's already got 35,000 to sell and growing, probably going to be over or significantly more by the time you get to the open because it's down so much. That's maybe the bulk of them, but there's quite a few there.
Dennis, what are you doing to the market here? You mentioned GIS and it falls out of bed. Then you mentioned all these seller balances and the market goes down.
Well, it's been going down.
It's quick.
It's the imbalances. So, I coincidentally started talking about GIS right when the imbalance came out. It's only got 11,000 to buy. It doesn't have enough to buy. So it's trading 173,000 shares. It's come down. I am short GIS now, full disclosure. I shorted after I just started talking about it. I should have shorted initially just because it was trading up there at 35, and then it went down 25 and 20. I started getting it in the teens, 49, 14, and right in that area there. It's 48.53. I do intend to cover this at the open, but I just don't think it's open over 48.5. So that's why. Obviously.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm just trading it just from the book, trying to read it. 48.5 has 130,000 shares there now. I mean, it grew. And then there's another 100. Like, I think it's going to struggle over to open over 48.5. That's what I said originally. I'm going to say it again. So that's why I was shorting above 49.
Okay. And no more talk on General Mills. People are going to start accusing us of liking stocks in the G's too much here. But
we didn't like GIS.
We didn't talk General Electric today. We talked General Electric
more. Oh, the general stocks. Like trading the general stocks. General Mills, General Electric.
General Motors.
Thoughts on GE?
General Motors, guys. Come on.
Well, General Motors, too. Yeah, General. And GM's getting hit here this morning. What's going on, GM?
Fast market here. Go ahead. Spencer, you got the news on GM.
No.
I don't know if there is.
I don't know if there is news on GM this morning.
It's got 16,000 to sell. Market's starting to roll over here again. We got up to scratch, and now it's starting to show some weakness here. I mean, if I'm looking at what's really – financials are looking a little bit weak here too. You got the TLT. Remember, financials move opposite. The banks at least move opposite to the TLT, and TLT's trading on 50 cents. So that's going to put pressure on the banks here. So a little follow-through selling from yesterday in there, and a little follow-through selling overall. You know, when we got back up to flat there around 828, 829, then they think some of these sell imbalances came out, and they're like, okay, we better start hitting them again.
All right. Looks like the buyers are getting a little tired here in AMD at the 2650 area. It's still up 28 cents. I'd be interested to see if this goes red today, how far they take it down. Spencer, I'm going to give you the stock here, and then you tell me if there's any relevant news. I'm just going to try and do like a 15-cent technical, or 15-second technical, if possible. AMRH, you seen anything on this one? Just a sleepy stock here, long consolidation. It's a penny stock. If you buy it here, the most you can lose is 47 cents. I will go to NTNX. Nutanix got hit off its report, but it's been working its way back. really tight ranges here. Trading range since the 13th from, let's call it 37 to 39. If in fact you could clear this, get that seller out of 39, there's some more room to the upside in this one to fill the gap. If in fact it decides to reverse, you're going to have to figure your own 50% retracement here from the low of the move at 32.52 up to the recent high area. But got to get rid of that seller at 39. Square, SQ, my long-term number in this one is 75. I'm just keeping an eye on it. It's dancing above and below it. That's the 50% retracement of the break. So nothing definitive as far as daily levels go. 70, this call 79 is big. You bumped your head in three trading sessions, 78 and a quarter, 78, 72, 78, 75. Rebound that off, 79 major resistance in that one. Recovered square, BHC. Dennis, you said you trade that one a lot. Is this,
Yes, it is. Valiant.
Oh my God. Valiant, right?
Yes. And
this, the old, man, what a sneaky little stock. Did they change the symbol on that? Great day yesterday. Not sure what the news was on it. You had the two-day move. A little weak in the pre-market. 26.34. You want to get back over there. I keep two things to keep an eye on here for a continued rally. While the high and the close are right at the same area, you backed off there. 26.29, 26.34. Trading under 26 right now. Above that, I see another high at 26.50. So, really, I think you're going to run into a little resistance here, especially you're trading red here in the pre-market session. Spencer, do you know what the news was this on yesterday?
Well, this morning they're getting initiated a buy from SunTrust Robinson Humphrey and a $30 price target. But I don't see anything yesterday on BHC. Okay. But on that note, let's wrap up for the day.
Okay.
So thank you, everyone, who joined us. Thanks to our guest, Trip Miller. If you missed any part of our show, you can catch our podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcast. Please remember, all the information we discuss on our show is for informational purposes only, not meant to be investing advice. Hope everyone had a good day or has had a good day. Have a good rest of your day, and we will see you on Thursday.